What a day, what a week. It's the Fan Drive time of Rash, Madani, Stephen Brunt. We're with you until 7 o'clock. Woke up early this morning, just reached for the phone. First thing I wanted to see, what's going on with Novak Djokovic? What's happening in Australia? This was going to be D-Day. The tournament starts in, 48 hours. And while I'm scrolling looking for Novak, suddenly word comes out of Germany. Alfonso Davies is dealing with what Bayern Munich is calling signs of mild myocarditis in the aftermath of Davies' COVID-19 diagnosis. Tested positive a little while ago. They did an ultrasound after Davies was kind of coming back to the team. They saw the sign of myocarditis. He's going to take some time. He's sitting out for a while. He's not going to play against Cologne this week. And that means he's also going to miss the next three games of Canada's World Cup qualifying matches. Canada Soccer announced this afternoon that Davies will miss the game in Honduras coming up in a couple of weeks. He's going to miss the home game against the United States 2 weeks from Sunday and also be absent in El Salvador February 2nd. So six games remain in World Cup qualifying for Canada, and Davies is going to miss all three in this upcoming window. Of course, Davies is 21 years old and in terrific athletic shape, and we hope from a health standpoint everything is going to be okay for Alfonso. From a soccer standpoint, a massive bomb being dropped on Canada's national team, Steve, today.
Yeah, it's horrible luck. It just is. There's no other way to put it.
And timing.
The timing. Well, I say it could be worse because, that there's still another qualifying window to come. And, that one, it may come down to that. Canada's at least in good position at the top of the table right now. Mm-hmm. It's not like they have to work miracles in these three games to have a chance to qualify. They're still really well positioned to qualify as long as this isn't a total disaster. And I guess the biggest thing is, it's not a one-man side. It's right. This is a very solid and very, very talented team that Canada can field. Alfonso Davies is one of the best players in the world. So I'm not saying that's no big deal if you lose him, but they do have other players. And this is one of the biggest moments in Canadian soccer history. You want maybe the guy who's going to be remembered as the best player in Canadian history available to you. But they're, John Herdman, there are other things John Herdman can dial up, and there's other lineups. And I'll tell you one thing. We've seen Canada succeed on nights when Alfonso Davies wasn't dominating. Now, that may have been because the opponent was concentrating so much on making sure Alfonso Davies didn't dominate that it opened up space for other guys. Like, that's possible. But, the game in Edmonton against Mexico, that was not, the Alfonso Davies show. That was other people. I'm confident they can get results in these matches, which is what we're talking about. It's really hard to go to Central America and get a result, period. You Arash, you've been there. You were in San Pedro Sula, the garden spot of Honduras. One of the nastier places in the world to play. They've got that. They've got El Salvador. But they're better than both of those teams, But so if you go in there and get a point, that'd be awesome. And then the game against the Americans, the real shame about this is we already knew it wasn't going to be quite the event we had hoped for because of COVID restrictions. We're still not entirely sure how many people are going to be allowed in. Mm-hmm. But the sense of, the Americans as the great rival and, Canada being every bit their match and some of that stuff had already gone because it's not going to be a full house wearing red cheering Canada on. And taking Davies away from that match now diminishes it again. But now you kind of get down to, what's the practical business of qualifying for the World Cup? That's the prize here. And I think, it's about being efficient and being smart and, kind of minimizing risk. It's not like they're going to park the bus because this side doesn't have to do that. You've got Kyle Larin, you got Jonathan David, you've got people who can score other than Alfonso Davies. But, you need to kind of... Maybe I think John Herdman probably is thinking about those matches tactically a little differently than he was 24 hours ago.
Well, and we've seen Herdman pivot when it comes to tactics, when it comes to lineups already through this qualifying process. Let's remember back in Edmonton, the last game, Jonathan David didn't start that game, and it paid off for Canada. That was the Kyle Larin game. That was the Snowbank game at Commonwealth Stadium. So we've seen Herdman kind of do John Herdman things. Now it gets interesting without Davies. Who knows what's going to happen on any kind of injury front between now and then. Don't forget, Canada was to have a training camp in Florida. That got whacked because of COVID reasons. So this qualifying window, there are only two left in the lead up to Qatar. This one is Honduras, USA, El Salvador, and Davies will miss all three of those. The next ones are in late March. Canada gets Costa Rica, Jamaica, and Panama. Panama on March 30th, and it was Panama, of course, that Davies scored the goal to end all goals. Look, it's wild, and if you believe the things coming out of Munich right now, and from Bayern Munich, that Davies is going to be okay. There are reports that, you know, from Davies' agent that right now the biggest thing he's dealing with is boredom. So that's the good news from a health standpoint for Alphonso, the guy, and Alphonso, the player. But let's also, you know, then from the soccer standpoint, yes, Canada will have to deal without him. We're still talking about one of the finest left backs in the world. We're talking about a kid who at the age of 21 already has 35 caps for Canada, has 10 goals in that span. But the good news for Canada from a qualifying standpoint is the breathing room that they have right now. Their record is 4-0-4. Six games remaining, top of the final round of qualifying in CONCACAF. So a lot is on their side. And I think, Steve, we're going to learn a lot about this team, and this team is going to learn a lot about itself without Alphonso Davies in the mix. Dwayne DiRosario, Diro. The former captain of the national team and TFC will join us coming up a little later in the show. And that's what I'm intrigued to talk to Diro about, is when something like this happens. You know, they always say next man up in pro sports, but when you have a small window to develop chemistry and be a team, then what happens? And that to me becomes one of the biggest questions of all.
Yeah, it will be. I'll tell you, John Herdman has been many things. You know, he's and I think we've seen him be, you know, do some interesting stuff tactically. But you know, the thing he's best at, and I think the women who played for him would tell you the same stuff, is that he's great on the kind of the psychology of sport, right? The of team building, the idea of kind of the collective being greater than the sum of its parts, and belief, right? You think of, you know, what's the difference between this Canadian men's national team and other ones? It's the self-belief. They and this goes back to the pre-COVID qualifier against the United States at BMO, when there were zero expectations that Canada was going to get to the World Cup, and they beat the Americans at BMO on a night when, you know, I think that's, you know, that elevated the game in Canada and elevated the confidence level and kind of made a lot of people, including me, go, hang on a second. You know, we're way farther down this road than I thought I was. That's the John Herdman trademark. So, you know, you can kind of see what, you know, he's got to work with here, which is, you know, as I said, look, number one, a very talented and deeply talented, the most deeply talented Canadian team, men's team ever. In terms of world-class players at various positions. But he's also got a group, you know, and remember, we did see them without Fonzie when he had to go back to Bayern Munich after he took a little knock in a previous qualifying round, and the clubs, you know, the club said, you've got to go home, you can't, because they get first call or last call on this. But what those other guys in the room, like, I don't think they, I wouldn't go as far to say they resent the attention Fonzie's received in Canada, but They're not a bunch of pikers, Arash, and I, you know, maybe it's not that hard to go into that room and say, you know, you guys are every bit as much a part of it as he is. You're a terrific side without him. We miss him. We'd love to have him here, but show everybody what you got. Show them the other guys, who those other people wearing the Canada kits are. And I think we've had moments like that already. I think a lot of people who didn't know who Kyle Larin was, like, despite all the goals he scored for Canada after that Edmonton game, went, holy smokes, you know, who is this guy? He's really good.
It's a Canadian heritage moment, Steve. The jump in the snowbank is iconic now. Yeah.
Jonathan David didn't start that match, but people have heard a ton about Jonathan David and his exploits playing in France. And, you know, we've seen, you know, Tayshaun Buchanan, and we've seen a bunch of players through this. I think Canadians are just figuring that out. But this is kind of their moment. This is the moment for the 10 guys who started that last match who are not Alphonso Davies. And whoever the 11th is who fills in for him, this is kind of, here you go, pass the torch. And I'm definitely not a coach or a psychologist, but I understand what card I would play with my team.
Yeah, and this is not a generation ago Canada basketball where it was Steve Nash and everybody else, and Steve Nash isn't playing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a one man show. We talk about Kyle Larin. Larin's becoming a household name among sports fans in Canada because of the snowbank moment. But let's understand, Kyle Larin's next goal makes him the most prolific goal scorer in national team history, ahead of Dero, ahead of Dale Mitchell. Not far behind is Jonathan David. He's right there. And Atiba Hutchinson, who was the captain of this team, has been through all the crap. He's been through the darkest days. He was a teammate of D-Rose back in the day. Atiba had to suffer the humiliation of Honduras 10 years ago when D-Ro was hurt and couldn't play, and how much that affected the team. This is... Look, I fully understand the PTSD that exists among fans of this national team. You've been through so much. And the team's only qualified once, and that was a million years ago. It was 35 years ago. But, man, this is different. It's all together different. It is not... And Davies is the guy. let's remember that. But if Canada's men's basketball team were to have everybody up and... Who's the best Canadian player today? Jamal Murray. If Jamal can't go, Shea's there and Nikhil's there and RJ is there and Lou Dort's there and on it goes. The soccer team is not quite that deep, but man, it's damn close. And that's why I really believe we're going to learn a little bit about some other guys. Who's the next Kyle Larin who hasn't had his breakout moment yet? Yeah, it is looking at the glass a little half full. But because they're 4-0-4, because there's another window of three matches against lesser opponents, there's not as much concern as there would have been in eras past and generations past. So that's why the PTSD can just be taken down a notch.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point, Arash. It's, you know, famous last words, too. Like, I hope it doesn't come down to that last match in Panama in March. But, you know, the other part of it is, if you look at the standings now, the tables in terms of qualifying, you know, if you finish fourth, you know, the top three go through automatically. The fourth place in a one-game crossover on a neutral site against Oceania, so against New Zealand, you know, almost 100% certainly. So, you know, even if Canada happened to fall to fourth, it's pretty much impossible for them to fall below that. You're still probably going to the World Cup. But it's just, I have a lot of faith in John Herdman. I do. And I've watched him, how he rebuilt that women's team after the 2011 World Cup. And, you know, by the summer.
In short order.
Yeah, they're winning a gold medal in 2012 at the Olympics, right? He's really good about the emotional. Again, as I said, the emotional part of the game, and I think it's not just that though. Like, this is not just a bunch of pluggers that he has to turn into his side. This is a bunch of really good, world class players who are playing with a tremendous degree of confidence, who have had success, who are at the top of the table, and it's not a fluke. Who've played Mexico, you know, on better than even terms over three matches the last 10 or 8 or 9 months. I don't think anybody has to hold their hand. I think it's just, you know, say go out there and do what you do. We'll see. The only thing I said, you know, the ideal would have been on a snowy field in my hometown of Hamilton in a couple of weeks with a full house watching Alphonso Davies and the rest of his Canadian teammates at their absolute best against the Americans. We're, you know, that unfortunately, that's not an option.
Steve, I think what we've found out over the last 22 months, we just can't have nice things.
Yes, yeah,
we think
welcome.
We might.
Yeah. I was going to say, welcome to the 2022, world. 2021, 22. Yeah, you are correct, my friend.
The roaring 20s, these are not. Yeah. Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt, it's the fan drive time on your Friday afternoon. And now Novak Djokovic. By the way, again, Dwayne DiRosario, the former captain of the national team, will join us to talk about the Alphonso Davies situation coming up a little later in the show. But Djokovic, this has truly been a soap opera that has had one turn after another. Enter stage left, you hear the wrestling music shattering, and a different turn coming up here. So this morning we woke up to the news that Australia's immigration minister has overruled the decision being Novak's appeal being granted to stay in the country, and that Novak is to be, for the lack of a better term, deported. Novak is now appealing the appeal of the appeal of the appeal. So he's still trying to play in the Australian Open, which begins in about 48 hours, give or take. He's only practiced for 2 or 3 days. And there is no definitive decision fully on what Djokovic's status is for the tournament. On he could be barred from the country for up to 3 years. And whether or not he's actually going to be able to stay in the country when the tournament gets underway.
Well,
Steve,
he's
appealing that again. So
yeah,
I don't know if I can remember a story within a week that has had so many twists and turns. And at this point, it really feels like this is the end of the line for Djokovic, but you never say never, I guess, at this stage of things.
But Arash, like this, you know, I was thinking about this as this was playing out today. Okay, so who's on Team Novak here? You know, who's sitting there saying this is grossly unfair? You know, well, the entire nation of Serbia, anti-vaxxers, not his fellow pros, not his fellow players. You know, there's been some kind of qualified, well, you know, it's unfortunate stuff, but
Steve, let me stop you right here.
Yeah.
There is some breaking news on this. It's early morning in Australia. It's what, around 8:15 a.m.? Ben Rothenberg from the New York Times has just tweeted this. CNN is reporting that Novak has been detained again by Australian border authorities Saturday morning there, Friday afternoon here. And that was per a court-ordered arrangement decided Friday in Australia. So Djokovic, according to CNN, has been detained by Australian border authorities a little while ago. Go on.
Yeah, I think that was suggested as soon as the immigration minister's ruling, which, you know, it is a political decision. This is not a court decision, but a political decision came down that
right.
He will be stuck back in the detention hotel until this is decided, and he'll be put on a plane home if he doesn't win his appeal. But as I said, I'm not sure. Like I say, this is a political decision, and that's to some degree based the Prime Minister of Australia. And here's something that might sound familiar, because basically it's the truth everywhere in the world. The government of Australia is dealing with a lot of public unrest about how they've handled the pandemic. People don't think they've handled it very well. There's an election coming. Now, I'm trying to think of a government in the world in a democracy where people are happy with how they've handled the pandemic. I don't think there is one. So, you know, but they had a very strict approach. They had very restricted border regulations. They had, in the Victoria state where Melbourne is, they had the most draconian lockdowns of anywhere outside of China. they, you know, and they, of course, they still couldn't keep it, even though they're on an island in the middle of the South Pacific, they couldn't keep the virus away. And, you know, it's like people aren't happy there. They're very, very unhappy there. And, you know, in the midst of that, you have this drama playing out. And again, think of the public mood where we are right now, which is, you know, pretty grumpy, right? People are, this has been a long haul. It's really, everybody's kind of confined to quarters. There's the, our public officials come on every day and say, boy, the numbers are still going up, and your kids may be able to go back to school, but we're not sure when you're going to get your life back. And we're not sure if this is the end of it. People are grumpy, and they shouldn't. Yeah. And in the face of that, you throw out a guy who kind of, you know, laughed in the face of this in a lot of ways, who seems to be using his privilege to kind of end run the system, who, you know, in a best case scenario, actually, you know, it, you know, tested positive, had a legitimate PCR test and tested positive for COVID in the in December, if that was legitimate. But after that test, you know, consorted with the public with no mask on, and traveled outside the country, yeah, which he then lied about on his application. Who's lining up for this guy? Like, you know, I like tennis. I'd love to see him play, but who's right behind him?
Well, and at this point, the Australian government isn't even hiding it anymore. Their immigration minister, Alex Hawke, basically said the presence of Djokovic through the Australian Open, this was his point, may put lives and civil order at risk because Djokovic is increasing anti-vax sentiment and disregard for the COVID rules. Like, they're coming out and saying it. What the minister said, what he called Djokovic, Steve, this was the direct quote, a high-profile, unvaccinated individual, close quote. And he said, quote, he said of Djokovic, quote, apparent disregard for basic COVID rules. They're now saying it. They're not even hiding behind it. This is where they are.
Well, it's true. Everything he just said is true. And, you know, you may turn this guy into a martyr for the anti-vax crowd, but I'd still rather do that than have him trot out there and, you know, and somehow have beat the system. And you know, while trying, and again, whatever you think about whether or not his PCR test was legitimate, it's, you know, there's no question about how he has approached this from the beginning. You know, he had his super spreader event back in the summer of 2020. He did, was out in public without a mask after having tested. Like, this is a public health issue. This is not a, you know, your opinion issue. This is not, you know, oh, well, then we've got to respect people. No, I don't have to respect people who violate, you know, basic public health requirements in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. I'm sorry. He's wrong. And, you know, and he shouldn't get away with it. And, you know, look, in Australia, yeah, they're I guarantee you the politicians are testing the wind and saying, yeah, this is what our public wants, and this is why we're going to do it. But they're not, it doesn't mean they're wrong. It doesn't in any way mean they're wrong. I think they're absolutely right to do what they're doing. Put them on a plane.
Here's what's interesting about this. There's a Serbian reporter who says, according to his sources, Sasha Osmo is the reporter, he said there were 9 people connected with the Australian Open who were granted a medical exemption. 9 people total. According to Osmo, the reporter, he says only 3 fall in the player/coaches category. Djokovic, Renata Voracova, and another player whose name apparently is going to be coming out soon. The Voracova situation is so interesting because she's the Czech doubles player who had been in the country for 8 days, had played in a tournament, and because of Djokovic, they went and told her, okay, we gotta bring you in now too. And Voracova said, I'm out. And in an interview with The Guardian, Voracova came out and said, her direct quote was, I felt like a criminal. So there are so many different layers to this story that just is not going away. And we're going to break it down with Chris Almeida, the staff editor over at Sports Illustrated, who has been covering this. Look, it's been, what, 10 days in the making, this whole story? It has to be resolved in the next 48 hours because that's when the tournament starts.
Yeah, but it's not about the tournament, Arash. It doesn't have to be resolved. They can resolve it whenever they want. It doesn't. That's got. This is not about whether Novak Djokovic can play tennis. Like it's not. Like it's. They've scheduled him. He's supposed to play Monday. He's. Yeah. It's. He's going to get deported. I don't care if he plays tennis. And I think most again the citizens of Australia, whose elected representatives are going to make this decision. They have an extraordinarily high vaccination rate in Australia, which tells you that people are on side, where people are coming from. I don't think anybody's going to, really fret whether or not he's in the draw in the Australian Open at this point. That's not what it's about.
Yeah, but also what are the ramifications of this? Will he be banned for 3 years? And how set in stone is that? This is such a unprecedented deal.
He could have avoided this pretty easily, Arash.
By
he could have
jabbed.
Avoided the way you did, and the way I did, and the way 90% of people in Australia did, and 90% of the people in this country did. Pretty straightforward. This is not this is his choice. It's not Australia's choice. He made the choice.
Yeah. And so, just a little while ago, Novak Djokovic, detained by Australian border authorities. His visa has been revoked twice by immigration officials in that country. Djokovic is still hoping to play the Australian Open, which begins on Monday in Melbourne. We will talk more about that. The Maple Leafs are off tonight. They're in St. Louis tomorrow. The Raptors open a 5-game road trip tonight in Detroit. And oh yeah, the NFL playoffs start tomorrow. Connor Orr from the Monday Morning Quarterback is going to pop by and join us a little later. He has the Bills and that team in Wisconsin, whatever they are, in the Super Bowl. We'll talk with Connor about why he feels that Buffalo has itself a Super Bowl chance. It's the Fan Drive time. We'll be back right after this. Fan Drive time, Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt. Ben Ennis returns on Monday. You guys may have a few things to talk about with 5 football games Saturday and Sunday, Mr. Brunt.
Just maybe. Yeah, just thank God for a lot of football and a lot of news and a lot of stuff to talk about. It is a blessing.
What is the game you're looking most forward to? Mine's San Fran Dallas.
Yeah, I like that one. The one I'm most intrigued by is the one closest by. So I'm not sure it's going to be the most fun to watch. I think if Bill Belichick has its way, it's going to be really dreary. But
yes.
And I'm hoping that the Bills prevail. I think this is kind of a tasty combination because of history, because of the way San Fran's playing right now, because of Dallas being alternately great and awful this year at times. That'll be the best football game. If you're a neutral, just sit down and watch a game. That might be the best of the bunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Vegas, Cincinnati doesn't sound sexy. That has the potential to be a real nice one. Mm-hmm. I don't see Pittsburgh KC being anything but a runaway. They played just a few weeks ago and Kansas City ran them out of the gym. We'll be talking with Connor Orr from Monday Morning Quarterback a little later in the show. He's got Bills and Packers in the Super Bowl. See if Buffalo can get by Belichick. Outside of Alphonso Davies, the story of the day remains in Melbourne. According to CNN, Novak Djokovic was detained by Australian border authorities just a little while ago. It is Saturday morning down under. Djokovic, of course, his visa has been revoked twice. We woke up this morning on this side of the pond to the news that Djokovic's appeal was removed, or overruled, rather, by Australia's immigration minister. It is as the tournament turns in Australia. Let's bring in Chris Almeida from Sports Illustrated. He has been covering this entire thing. Chris, I'm trying to remember the last story that has had so many twists and turns over the course of a week and a half, and I swear, man, nothing really comes to mind. quite like this
one. Nothing even close, right? I mean, probably the closest thing I can think of also happened very recently, which is Antonio Brown, and even that was nothing like this.
Right. Yeah, there was no deportation involved with AB. He just took himself out of the game and off the team in New York. Steve?
Chris, could you just, you know, we just talked about before we went on break here about the fact that Djokovic has reported to the authorities. He's being, I guess he's reported for some kind of questioning, but essentially he's back in detention right now. Could you just do a little bit of a reset as to, you know, it's Saturday morning in Australia, kind of where we are in this process, what's to come in the next, potentially the next 24 hours?
Sure. So in the next 24 or 48 hours, we expect that we will get a result of his latest appeal. I imagine this is the last possible one, but basically it's his right to appeal the immigration minister's decision. I think that at this point, it's quite unlikely that that is successful. And in that case, he'll have to leave the country. And that obviously would prevent him from playing in the Australian Open, where he's a 3-time defending champion, 9-time champion overall, where he's looking to, you know, break the record for men's major singles titles. The tournament wouldn't do a redraw. They'd either have a lucky loser in his spot or would just have his opponent win in a walkover. But I mean, that's kind of all besides the point, because now you've gotten, you know, political forces across the globe involved. I don't really know how you come back from, you know, saying Novak being treated like this is like Jesus Christ being crucified, which is what his family was saying the other day, that the president of Serbia.
His father's direct quote.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is way bigger than just whether he plays in the tournament or not, which I think is unlikely. Also, a wrinkle here is that the Australian government can ban him from the country for up to 3 years, which case he won't be playing again in the tournament where he's probably best until he's 38. And as much as longevity in sports is extended over the past couple of years, I mean, that's a long time to be away from your favorite event.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, here's what I wonder, and I know this is small potatoes in the grand scheme of things, considering we're in a global pandemic and the rest. I'm really starting to wonder, countries that are very strict with when it comes to vaccinations, etc., like Canada.
Mm-hmm.
The timing from a tour standpoint, and again, this is just within the very small confines of the tennis thing. The National Bank Open here in Montreal and Toronto, because of the timing on the calendar, has a challenge bringing in some of the best players. And I wonder, for those who haven't been jabbed, I just wonder how many of them are just going to say, you know what, we're just not going to go. After watching all of this unfold and seeing how this is going to go. Now, granted, the ATP has said that 97% of the players are vaccinated. I just wonder how many are just going to say, to hell with it. This is the end doesn't justify the means.
So I think certainly Novak, because of his stature and, you know, what that means monetarily, and, you know, just of maybe his personal stubbornness, I think that if there's any other place where it seems like he's going to get any resistance at all, he probably wouldn't play. But as far as we know, you know, France has already come out and said, you're definitely allowed to play here. So that's not a problem. But yeah, I guess this big vaccination push, something we learned pretty recently, we had the documents leaked to us, is that the US Open, the ATP had 48% of players vaccinated. And so I think the real push that got maybe close to half of the men's top 100 vaccinated was the Australian Open. And so now that you've gotten that over, I mean, you know that two of the three people, being Novak Djokovic and Tennis Sandgren, are, you know, kind of accounted for. So even if there is a strict vaccination requirement at another tournament, there's not a lot of people who are falling into that category. And I'd imagine that once you're outside of the top 100, you don't really have a chance to pick and choose. You don't get to say, oh, I'm not going to the Canadian Open because it's not worth the time, because it is worth your time, even if it's a hassle. Yeah.
I think the shocking part of what you just said is that the vaccination rate in the U.S. at the U.S. Open was, what did you say, 48%? Like that?
48%. I couldn't believe it.
That's last fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's shocking. That's not early days. It's shocking that just a few months ago that was the case. So, you know, look, by whatever means necessary, you get people vaccinated. I'm fine if, you know, the getting to Australia was what motivated them. It's just shocking that number is lower than the general population of just about anywhere. It's, you know, it's lower than the general population of Mississippi, right? Like that's a very low number.
I mean, yeah, that's lower than certainly any sports league that I can think of, domestic or international. And I think that also what, you know, we've been hearing over the past couple of days is that's what's playing into the big reaction from the players. As far as Novak is concerned, is, you know, they're mad. They're all, you know, you had a population that was pretty hesitant to get vaccinated, and they said, fine, I really don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it because, like, that's what I need to do to, like, go and play in a major. And then they see this guy, you know, like, turning the whole news cycle upside down. There's helicopters flying overhead at their practices because of this. You know, the whole tournament is chaos, and they're saying, man, come on, like, couldn't you have just done what the rest of us did, like, even though we also didn't want to? And that's certainly not something that I was expecting.
Yeah. I don't sense his fellow players rallying around him here, Chris.
No.
Not at all.
No. This is Chris Almeida joining us from Sports Illustrated. He's been covering the Djokovic saga. So, take us through what could transpire over the next 48 hours. What would need to happen for Djokovic to actually be able to play on Monday morning in Melbourne in round one of the Open? Do you see a pathway in which that could conceivably happen, Chris?
It is technically possible. I would not put any money on it. Basically, his appeal of the immigration's overturning of his first successful appeal, that would need to be successful. And if that's successful, then he's allowed to play. But I feel like the Australian government has staked so much on this already, has changed course so many times, and that the public, which is 93% vaccinated in Australia, is so upset about this. I feel like at this point, at this late hour, after you've committed so much time and, like, cynically, you know, just political will and PR to this, you can't really go back and say, oh, whoops, we changed our mind a third time, he's good to play.
Right.
I would be shocked.
Yeah.
I guess the only question I'd have, Chris, is that if he, you know, if he just of his own volition got on a plane and left right now, would that allow him to potentially avoid, you know, the 3-year ban, that would go with the deportation order? That's the only question that I have left. And again, I'm not expecting you to have the answer to that, because it's probably not. I'm guessing Australian immigration law is probably not at your fingertips. But
it is certainly
on top of that. There's no real precedent for this over a COVID vaccination.
No, but he's if. You know, they do have, you know, they have the lots of rules about COVID and the Australian border. Those have existed for the last 3 years. But I just wonder if he's, you know, if he leaves, is that the same as if he just got on the Qantas flight to Belgrade right now? Is that the same as being deported? Is that the same as the border police escorting him to that plane and saying you have to get out of here? That's the only thing left to me, is whether, because, you know, at this point, you know, in theory, the case is still, the appeal at least is still hanging the balance, and he would be leaving the country voluntarily. But I think you're right, Chris. I think the chances of his winning, everything I've read, the chances of winning this appeal are pretty much zero.
Yeah. So as far as the 3-year ban is concerned, I'm not an expert on Australian immigration law as much as I've tried to become one over the last 2 weeks. I get the sense that it's really up to the discretion of the government. I think that if earlier in this process, he, you know, especially the first time he got to the border and there was confusion about his visa, if he'd said, all right, sorry, guys, whatever, see you next year, that would have been fine. He certainly wouldn't have been courting danger with the three-year ban. I think that the same thing could apply now, but the government certainly would be able to levy the three-year ban. I think every time he says no, he's encouraging them to do it more. But, you know, the statements from the immigration minister haven't mentioned that explicitly, so we just have to wait for them to say what's happening there. I don't think there's any ironclad rules there.
Yeah. Yeah, we wait. That seems to be the main theme of this entire saga with Novak Djokovic and Australia and the Open and what may happen next. You have to think there is going to be a definitive decision one way or another quite soon, especially considering in the last couple of hours, Djokovic, according to CNN, detained by Australian border authorities as per a court-ordered arrangement. Chris, appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, there goes Chris Almeida, staff editor at Sports Illustrated. He has been covering this entire Novak Djokovic saga.
Whew. Arash, you know tennis players. What the hell is wrong with tennis players not being vaccinated last fall? That's does that make sense with that population group as far as you would understand it?
It does. You know, just taking it back too, like when you say 48% last fall, think about last fall was after the Tokyo Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
The National Bank Open in Toronto was a bubble. One of the last tournaments to be a bubble because there were so few players vaccinated. There are a number of American players who are unvaccinated. A number of Eastern European players who are unvaccinated. There was even a Canadian player who had gotten his first vaccine and hadn't got a second. You know, and the way that player explained it to me was, I just needed to find a window of time where I could get it because I just didn't want to get it and then develop symptoms and kind of be down for the count for a week or two. Not part of the anti-vax movement, but that. What's wrong with them, Steve? I don't have the answer to that. But that it was a major, major issue in that sport. Funny, though. You want to go to a Grand Slam? You want to play in Australia? You want to be part of the prize money where the purse is whatever, you know, mm-hmm. one of the top purses in the world? You got to be vaccinated. It's funny how the dangling of some cash changed some minds in a hurry.
Yeah, we've seen apparently being able to get access to a liquor store has changed some minds in Quebec. So, you know, yes. It's funny how those principles hold to a point and not to another point. But I just kept thinking, Rash, is, you know, look, I know there are other, you know, there are different kinds of issues, but the National Hockey League starting the season in the same fall, had one unvaccinated player, period.
Yes.
One guy. You know, the yeah. NFL, where, you know, we do know who some of the very prominent unvax guys are, still had a vaccination rate of what, 80-something percent? Like, it's still very high. Like, that 48% of tennis players is an outlier. It really is.
I mean, for the most part in football, I'm not talking about hockey, and I don't, because I just don't know enough about their, for the football's North American athletes. You talk about tennis, it's suddenly people from all over the world who have a lot of different thought processes on all of this. I asked a Eastern European unvaxxed member of the tennis community. I said, what the hell? Why not? And he said, why would I trust my government?
Well,
That was a player from an Eastern Bloc country. So that was the answer that I was given. And look, I'm just offering you what I was told.
Yeah. No,
I'm not
shooting the messenger, believe me. I'm not shooting the messenger on that one, but I am rolling my eyes on the radio, if that's okay.
Sure.
Sure. I can't even see you in our team's window. So we thank Chris Almeida for joining us. A couple of quick things on the Raptors. They opened the road trip in Detroit today. Good news, Dwayne Casey's out of health and safety protocols. Looks like he's okay. Getting some tweets from Michael Grange. Casey was asked about Fred VanVleet having this all-star caliber season. Casey's line on Fred, quote, he's Kyle Lowry. He's a clone of Kyle. He should be an all-star. Absolutely. Some nice words from Casey on VanVleet. Casey also said Pascal Siakam has been making an all-star statement with his play of late. As for the Raptors lineup tonight, Gary Trent Jr. is out against Detroit. Scotty Barnes remains a game day decision. It's an ankle for Gary Trent Jr. It is a knee for Scotty Barnes. They missed the other night, Tuesday, against Phoenix. So wait and see deal for both of those guys. Remember, we had Nick Nurse on yesterday, Steve. He was saying with Fred, minutes-wise, he played too many against the Suns on Tuesday. They had two nights off in between games. Or Wednesday, they had a couple of nights off. Nurse's target is 36 to 38 minutes for VanVleet on the floor each night. Nurse said, I'd be pretty comfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah. That's the question is who gets the rest of those minutes. And again, it's been the unlikely point guard Pascal Siakam was getting been in that role, right? It's been interesting to watch them adapt that way. At a certain point, though, I think, Arash, and I'm not sure it's going to happen internally, but at a certain point, they're going to need a point guard, another point guard.
Yes.
You know, I think I know Goran Dragic could be that guy, but he's apparently not available. Malachi Flynn appears to have, taken a half step backwards this year. So that, it's working okay right now and in a kind of an unconventional way, but it'll be interesting to see as we head towards the deadline. And if this team continues to look good, does that become a priority, getting somebody who can spell Fred VanVleet, take some of his minutes, and also give you, kind of really solid point guard play.
And we're about to see some barometer games here in the East. A couple coming up. Forget Detroit tonight. But tomorrow they're in Milwaukee. The Bucks absolutely dismantling Golden State last night. But Giannis is back. This is not the same Milwaukee team they faced last week when they knocked them off. And Miami coming up early next week. Story from Woj earlier. Heat All-Star center Bam Adebayo targeting a Monday return to the lineup. So Kyle Lowry's getting some provisions coming back just in time to face his old team. We're going to see, especially tomorrow and then on Monday, if Adebayo does indeed return and Miami team that's playing well, we're Jimmy Butler into that mix. We're about to see exactly what the Raptors can do against the upper echelon of the NBA. And I think that's going to be a real measuring stick to see, okay, who are we, what are we, and what are we thinking going into the deadline?
Especially if those teams are not, because they're playing at home, are not in load management mode, right? Where suddenly, it's Giannis needs a night off. It'll be interesting to see if they have the full complement. But hey, I got to say one thing. Don't sleep on Dwayne Casey's Pistons. They play the Raptors tough for whatever reason. Since Dwayne has been there, I'm sure he gets up for those games, but his team seems to a little bit as well.
Yeah. Mike, what did you say? Casey, something like 7-2 or something to that effect against Toronto since making the move over to Detroit. It's a 5-game road trip for the Raptors. Again, Gary Trent Jr. is out. Scotty Barnes, a game time decision. The big news today from a Canadian standpoint, Alphonso Davies is out of the upcoming World Cup qualifying window, dealing with mild myocarditis, according to Bayern Munich, that developed after a bout with COVID-19. Coming up next, Canada's former captain of the national team, Dwayne De Rosario. You know him as Dero, on the absence of Davies and what's coming up for the national team. It's the Fan Drive time.